Now, where the shift in perspective needs to start is how the principal or the school administrator views their job. If you flip to the next page in your handout. In any organization, schools included, there are two types of employees, not one better, not one worse. The first type of employee is what we call a technician. A technician is an expert. They're a specialist. Their expertise runs narrow, it runs deep. They generally do one thing and they do it very well, and they're not easily interchangeable with each other. So examples of this in your schools would be teachers, librarians, custodians, counselors, nurses, school secretaries, to some degree assistant principals, but we're kind of here to change that up a little bit. And we love our technicians, yes? Without the technicians, the school doesn't run. And in any organization, schools included, you have another type of employee called the manager. And a manager is a person whose job it is to get things done through other people. That's what it, by definition, if you look it up in the dictionary, manager comes from the same root as the word manger, right? Which was all about herding animals to do things for you. Manager, manger, same root in Latin. A manager's job is to get things done through other people. So their primary functions are coordinating the actions of others, training and developing, supporting, coaching, directing, orchestrating events. And by design in our schools, these are our principals, our district office coordinators, I'm just going to use that title to kind of encompass everybody here, our assistant superintendents, and our superintendents. The main difference between a manager and a technician is that managers get paid to talk, not to do anything. This would be a very good time for you all to take a breath. I see people paused in the middle of their coffee. They're like, Managers get paid to talk, not to do anything. Now, I know this is sometimes very hard for you to hear as school administrators, so let's take it out of education for a minute, and let's examine the concept in a different context. Let's examine the concept in the world of sports. Because the great thing about sports is all sports cares about is what worked. If it worked last year and doesn't work this year, they let it go. That's the extent of their interest. Anybody here in the room play golf? Like, what's the shortest club in your bag? The putter, right? The putter? Yeah, for most people, the shortest club in their bag is the putter. But for some pros on the tour right now, if you watch, the putter is the longest club in their bag. And it goes from their chin to the ground. And it looks ridiculous. But if it knocks it in the hole, they'll use it every time. Because all sports cares about is what works. For purposes of this conversation, we're going to use baseball as our sport of choice here. So let me ask the locals. You know, being from the East Coast, originally from Yankee territory, do you guys have a baseball team in this town? What? Oh, the Giants, okay. The Giants. Forgot there was a whole left coast. Can we agree that the game of baseball happens here on the field? This is yes. This is no, this is Can we agree that the game of baseball that apparently the world championship Giants play is on the field here? Yes, okay. And in baseball, you have two types of employees. The first type of employees are your players. And what are they doing? They're hitting, they're catching, they're throwing, they're running, they're playing the game of baseball. And in my model, these are your what? Technicians, yes. And do we love our technicians? Do we love our San Francisco Giants? Yeah, they're the reason we come to the game. Love our technicians. Without the players, there is no game. And in baseball, you have another type of employee called the what? The coach or the manager. Right. And my question for all of you is, so with respect to the game that's happening here on the field, what does the manager do?
He stands on the side.
He's in the dugout. He talks. He plans. He watches. And where does he do all that from? The dugout. Yeah. By the way, what's the name of your World Championship Giants manager? It's Bochy? Bochy, okay. Well, you know, he was once in San Diego when I lived there. We have a signed baseball by him. Ah, Bruce Bochy. Okay, so my question is, and I'm still puzzled here, with respect to the game that's happening here on the field, what does the manager do? What does the pitcher do? He throws the ball. What does the catcher do? He catches the ball. What does the first baseman do? And tags people out. What does the manager do? With respect to the game that's happening here on the field, what does the manager do? He watches it. He coaches. He calls plays. And where does he do all that from? The dugout. Yeah. But my question is, with respect to the game that's happening here on the field, what does the manager do? I mean, he wears the uniform, he wears the cap. What does the manager do? Thank you. With respect to the game that's happening here on the diamond, the manager does nothing. Question. Did Bruce Bochy ever play the game of baseball? Anybody know? Yes, and when he played, what position did he play?
Catcher.
He played catcher. Okay, good. When he went from this position here on the field playing catcher, when he crossed this line here and became a manager, what did he have to do with respect to playing the game? Stop. He had to let go of playing the game. In fact, the skills that made Bruce Bochy a great catcher have nothing to do with the skills that make him a great manager. Because what does the catcher do? Catches the ball. What does the manager do? He talks. Two entirely different skill sets. One has nothing to do with the other. Now, at one time in sports history, there was a position known as the player coach. And a player coach was somebody who played and coached simultaneously. Does anybody in the room remember the name of the last great player coach? Thank you. Late 60s, when Bill Russell coached the Celtics to several world championships in a row. But since that time, on no continent, in no country, at anything approaching a high level of professionalism, is anybody using anything like player coach? And my question for all of you is, why not? Why not? It doesn't work, right? And what do we know about sports? If it worked last year, but it doesn't work this year, they let it go. And why doesn't it work? Yes, exactly. Because you can't play and coach simultaneously. Because I can't be playing third base and have any perspective on what's going on in the outfield in a way that I can coach the outfielders to improve their performance. And I can't coach myself while I'm in action. Tiger Woods, as great as he is, was, or is going to be, travels with a coach. When he steps up to the tee and he takes that swing, he cannot watch himself swinging in the moment that he's doing it. Coaching takes two, performer and observer. And just to dispel a myth, for any of you guys who think your best teachers don't need coaches, complete fallacy. All the best players have all the best coaches. Now, what are team owners interested in? Owners are interested in winning games. And what they figured out was they were more likely to win more games when they took one person off the field and had them put their attention on improving the performance of everybody else on the field. And then they started winning more games. But what we witness constantly in education is school administrators trying to be player coaches. You're trying to do the work
of running your organization and manage teams of people. You're working 70 more hours a week because you're literally doing two jobs. And how many of you would end that sentence is what? And doing neither one particularly well. The better title for what you're actually doing is head technician. You're like the head technician in your organization. You're an extension of the clerical staff. Player coach doesn't work for winning games. It will never work to produce a breakthrough in results. Now, it would make sense that you would think you should be doing the job this way, because how do school administrators become school administrators? When you're first hired into a school district, you're hired as what? Teacher, right? And in my model, that's what? Technician, right? And you get promoted for being a great technician. You get promoted for being a great technician. You get promoted for being a great technician. Then you land in the job of site administrator, or whatever job you land in. And so how do you still see the world? Through the eyes of what? So what logical conclusion would you draw? Keep doing what got me here. Why wouldn't you, right? It got you this far. Being a technician worked. It got you as far as it got you. And admit it for a while, guys, you love it. The ego gratification is unsurpassed. Everybody's coming to you for everything all the time. Everybody wants your opinion on everything all the time. Everybody wants you to be at everything all the time. And while you are in what we call this honeymoon phase, you are not a good candidate for this work. But once you are through the honeymoon phase, once you get there is no cheese at the end of that tunnel, that's when you're ready for this. For those of you who are cause a breakthrough for yourselves in your time, your results, and your satisfaction, the key to that is to let go of playing or coaching. This is not about better, faster, more efficient, you know, doing what you're doing in a better way. This is about letting go of playing or coaching, letting go of what got you here, moving in the direction of letting go. Part of the problem with the job of school administrator that we see is the job is so poorly defined that many of you do anything you can think to do, hoping that something you're doing is what you're supposed to be doing, when really what you're supposed to be doing is letting go and doing nothing. And it's amazing, when we work with principals, we go through every piece of paper in their offices. The record is 13 30-gallon trash cans that came out of an assistant superintendent's office. Every piece of paper. And I am astounded at how many principals still have lesson plans stashed away somewhere in their office, just in case this principal thing doesn't quite work out. If you're here for a breakthrough in your time and results, if you're here for a career and a life, you need to move in the direction of letting go of doing. Letting go of doing what got you here. Going from technician to manager is what we call a state change. It's not some slightly different tweak on what came before. It's an entirely different entity. It's like boiling water. When you boil water and it becomes steam, steam is not just hotter water, it's a gas. It's gone through a state change. Or if you freeze water and it becomes ice, ice is not just colder water, it's a solid. It's gone through a state change. Going from technician to manager is a state change. Turn to the person sitting next to you. I'm gonna give you 2 minutes, and I want you to discuss the following question. What I find appealing about this notion is, my concerns about it are. Ready, go. Okay, so let me take some thoughts from you. I'd like to hear what you find appealing about this, what you wonder about. And if there's a question in there somewhere, and I think I'm gonna answer it in a few more minutes down the road, I'm gonna say, we're gonna note that and hold that thought, and then there are gonna be some I'll answer right now. So, what I find appealing is, what I wonder about is. Who'd like to go first? Remember, please step up to the mic. I can
yell the way. Okay, so one of the big appeals is the time saving, being able to spend time with family.
Time with family, got it.
And my wonder or concern is I'm actually a teacher now applying for an AP position next year. Mm. Can I use this in a modified way as those upper managed or upper technician?
Great question. I'm just going to phrase this as how to use as AP. Let's take everybody's and I'm going to address this one. Keep going. What I find appealing is what I wonder about is.
I find appealing more time in the classroom with the kids and the teachers.
Yup.
I wonder about email.
Yes, okay. All right. That's great. We're going to address this one in a bit, but that's a great question. Somebody else. Let's take a couple more. Please step up to the mic.
What I find appealing is being able to look at data really constructively.
Yep.
And my concern is the teachers, because of their perception of how principalship should be, they may think, well, you're not coming in to model, you're not doing this, like we're not doing our job, we're kind of hiding out.
Teachers' thoughts about what you're doing. Okay. Good, I will address that. Any more? What I find appealing is, please step up to the mic.
Okay, the question, I guess this is actually just a wonder or concern.
Okay.
If you are sharing a secretary or administrative assistant.
Sharing a
secretary. Don't have one at all.
Yeah, or don't have one at all. Or none. Okay, good. So the first thing I want to address is how to use this as an AP. How many APs do we have in the room again? Please raise your hand. Okay, good number of you. So let me tell you something about the AP job that nobody else is going to tell you. I assert that the job of the AP is designed to burn you out. It is an internship. It's like the medical professions equivalent of the internship, right? In medical school, you go from the progression of profession in medicine, it's medical school, medical internship, doctor. If you're in the AP job, you're the intern. You're scrubs. The whole thing is designed to burn you out. And if you're in the AP ship, nobody should be doing that job for more than 2 years. After 2 years, you either need to move up and become a principal, go back to the classroom because you've discovered really what you love is teaching, or stay right where you are as an AP and stop suffering about it. It's designed to burn you out. But as I'm going to explain later down the road here, there are ways that principals who are developing their APs to become principals, because if that's the direction you want to go in, can use this methodology to begin to develop APs to become principals. But don't do that job. After 2 years, you should be doing something else. Does that begin to answer your question? Okay, good. Teachers' thought. I'm going to do this one too. Teachers' thoughts about what you're doing. Well, you know what? Hold that thought. Let me do the next section and let's see if this gets clearer about what the teachers are going to think. Okay? But all of this is really good. We'll work with all of this. And the email and the sharing of secretary, we'll get to all that. That's a kind of how-to, and it's coming. Okay? So we've talked about what the job isn't. Let's talk a little bit about what the job is by way of another example. How many of you have ever been to Nordstrom's? Raise your hand. And aside from shoes, ladies, what is Nordstrom's known for? Great customer service. And do you know why Nordstrom's has such great customer service? Nordstrom's does three things better than any other retailer on the market. Number one, they hire really great people. Sales associates at Nordstrom's can make up to $100,000 a year. So, you know, it's considered the mecca. Don't get any thoughts here. It's considered the mecca of retail. When they have a job position open at Nordstrom's, they got a line out the door. So they can hire the best of the best. The second thing Nordstrom's does really well is they train their associates very well. Before you ever get on the floor as a new associate at Nordstrom's, you go through 120 hours of off-site training. And they train you in everything, you know, like customer service, personal grooming, how to deal with the reps, alteration policies, return policies, everything. And then the last thing that Nordstrom's does better than any other retail group in the industry is every time they put a new associate on the floor, they put a manager right there next to them. And the manager's job in real time is to make sure that that new associate is implementing what they learned in training. Because what if I'm a new associate at Nordstrom's, it's my first day, it's a sale day, and it's completely crazy, and I got people coming at me right and left, and somebody comes at me with a question, and I am just flat out rude to them, and nobody says anything. And then the day's starting to come to an end, it's been a really long day, and I see the chance to go the extra mile for somebody, which Nordstrom's is really known for, and I don't take it. And nobody says anything. And then that night, because it's been such a hard, exhausting day, I meet up with the girls, we go out to the bar, we're, you know, supposed to just have a beer, one beer turns into pitcher beers, which turns into shots, before you know it, we're dancing on the bar, I roll into bed, 2 a.m., in the same clothes I wore that day, I sleep through my alarm clock, I finally get up, I chug a cup of coffee, roll into Nordstrom's in the same clothes I was wearing yesterday, hair not done, makeup completely disheveled, and nobody says anything. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what we have is Kmart. What makes Nordstrom's Nordstrom's is coaching. But now I want you to think about what you got going on in those classrooms out there. You've hired really great people. You've trained them upside down and forwards. Many of them come to you with master's degrees. They're constantly being sent out for training. And then they get into those classrooms, and they pretty much do whatever they want to do. You know what they say about teaching? Second oldest profession done behind closed doors. And if what they're doing is what you want them to be doing, then that's great. But if not, here's the problem we've got, yes? Coaches get paid to observe performance, give feedback, and train and develop people. Seeing it and hearing about it are two totally different things. There's literally nothing you do in those offices, nothing that has any impact on what's going on in those classrooms. The only way you can make a difference in what's going on in those classrooms is to be out there, be in those classrooms, see it with your own eyes, look at the data that matches what you're seeing in those classrooms, and then train and develop people. Because, you know, how much time does Bruce Bochy spend in his office while the game's being played out on the field? None? Why not? Because if Bruce Bochy spent all his time in his office while the game was being played out on the field, what, if anything, would he have to tell the players that would make any difference to their performance? Yeah? Zero. But many of you are spending 80 to 85% of your time in your offices, in district office meetings, off your campus, while the game is being played in those classrooms, and therefore you literally have nothing to tell the players that will make any difference to their performance. Managers need to be on the field where the game is being played. Another way of saying this is managers need to be where the service is being delivered. Managers need to be on the floor where the service is being delivered. And in your case, the service is being delivered in those classrooms, which is where you want to be anyways, which is what you love to do anyways, which is why you were hired anyways. And by the way, those teachers that are good teachers, that are excellent teachers, that are learning teachers, that are teachers that want to develop themselves in this profession, want you to be there too. Does that answer the question called, what are the teachers going to think? They will love it when you come into their classrooms. They do. The only ones that don't are the ones that shouldn't be teachers anyways. And there, and you have to be there too to make sure that that situation changes. People want you to see how they're doing. And that's where you want to be. That's where you can make the greatest difference. In my whole career, I have only met one school principal who told me she got into this because she loved the paperwork. I want you to turn to the person sitting next to you now and have this conversation. What I like about this notion is, My concerns about it so far are, now we'll take a minute. What do we like about this?
I like the fact that it defines my role, so I know what my big rocks are in principalship.
Yeah. What's your job title?
Principal.
You're a principal. Okay. Bottom line is you're accountable for three things. You're accountable for test scores going up. You're accountable for staying on or below budget. And you're accountable for making sure that it's a safe, non-catastrophic environment. Another way of saying that is that the doesn't hit the fan in your place and end up at the district office regularly. Those three things. If you can do those three things, that's your job. But primarily, make the test scores go up, do it by staying on or under budget, and make sure that there are no crises happening on a daily basis that the district office has to deal with while you're making that happen. If you can do those three things, that's your job. Now, I want to address district office supervisors, curriculum developers, that sort of those jobs up there at the district office. I've often coached people and worked with people in your position, and when I ask them, these district office supervisors, coordinators at that level, what are you accountable for? What do you need to, what has to happen under your management with your schools? They cannot tell me what they're accountable for, what needs to get produced by when. And I tell them, particularly in this budget climate, that's a very precarious position to be in. If you cannot tell me what you're accountable for producing and by when, you don't know what your job is, and therefore you can't say whether or not you've produced it for people, and therefore you can't justify whether or not you should be able to keep your job. And I've watched a lot of those middle managers at the district office go in this last 2 years. They're gone. Because they could not define what they were accountable for producing. So if this helped you in that regard, I'm glad. Yes, this is your job. This is your job. Next, there was another woman who wanted to come up to the mic. Go ahead.
I like that it will make my job more prescriptive. So if I'm in the classroom, I'm going to have specifics about what we're working on and to be able to have real conversations. And my concern is the volume of district level meetings and things that take me off campus.
Yes. Okay. So let me address, this is a two-part question, so let me address it. So yes, I have a partner who presents with me sometimes. And when Tom presents with me, he said, you know what this allowed him to do as a principal? He's now assistant superintendent for curriculum. And he was here this weekend. But what this allowed him to do as a principal was be in classrooms to see what was really going on, look at data, and design appropriate professional development to correspond with what he was seeing and what he was seeing on the paper. And that became what he was doing like 75% of his time. And if you were in California, his API scores jumped like 200 points in 1 year of practicing this because he spent his time in classrooms, then looking at data and doing appropriate professional development. So this idea called it's very prescriptive. Now the second, the district office meetings. In some districts where we work, they are really starting to get this. I was talking to another principal last week that I've been working with, and he said, you know, every time I go to a district office meeting, they talk about, well, you guys, you all in the field. This keeps, he says, I don't know, constantly, you all in the field. And they're talking to the principals. And he says, I stood up at a meeting, I said, stop referring to us as like in the field. We're all supposed to be in the field. We're all supposed to be out where the work is happening. You know, this is the field and the field is us. Why don't you come join us in the field? And what the data shows is that in these districts that are making the overall biggest gains, Wallace report just came out with a study on this. Districts that are making the biggest gains are districts in which the district office recognizes it is not their job to pile it on. It is their job to get out there where with you where the work is happening and see how they can assist you with what you need to do. And in districts where that's happening, biggest gains, where the people are getting out of the district office and coming to the principals. And when we work with districts, what we recommend is that that happen. We call it a coaching day, that the district have one set coaching day per week where everybody's involved in coaching. Everybody from the district office comes out. They come down to buildings. There's no meetings held on that day. And everybody's in the field. That's how this really begins to move.